great to be here. You know, we've been doing loads of readings around the place, but so it's really great. And I hope you'll bear with me because my voice went this morning, so I don't know how it's going to be. And the first poem I'm going to read is about resisting comfort after a series of losses, and it's called No Need. No need to tell me that endings are a moment of transcendence and all that is solid melts into air. No need to remind me of the eye-blink tales of life, like furniture stacked on the lawn that vanishes in a lizard flick. No need to challenge me to walk the high wire or drag me to a party with all the wrong people, where short men take up space with knuckles on hips and there's barely elbow room. No need to show me I'm in safe hands. I've seen your scar and know what you're made of. No need for you to hold up a cardboard cutout sun. I remember how it looks, how it feels. Or to suggest that I'm more stone than heart. What do you expect? I'm still half a couple from arc days, pickling memories in a jar. No need to say that love will return someday, like speech after long silence. That's dirty talk. The next poem is about facing one of my phobias on my own. It's called Rats. I saw it shuffling along the beam above the flickering TV, screamed, threw him the gun, but he said, no, she's carrying a little one, made me wait until she returned. Now, now! But another hung from her teeth as she crossed again. After I'd run from the room, he watched as she brought 14 of them into our home. I should have known then. It was grim, the lifetimes of years, while I laid poison, knocked them off one by one, sniffed out grey corpses, scraped up remains. He accused me of endangering owls, destroying the food chain. But the chain being destroyed was the one that bound me to him. When I awoke one night to see them scamper across dresser and windowsill, over our bodies, under the quilt, the next one was written by my alter ego, who I don't know how very often. Dessert. So there I was, lying beside my soon-to-be ex. You'd think we could spoon up together, slide an arm around a waist just for old time sex. I mean, sex, God forbid. But no, of course we can't. And now I know why. It's not me. It's X. Oh, yes, the X factor, which slipped his mind during that I can't go on anymore, I'm starved for love speech over dinner. Funny that, being starved for love. I've been trying to tempt him for the last 3 years with candles, oils, lingerie. Every advance repelled. I'm tired, I'm stressed, and now you want me to have sex? Suddenly, he was buying Calvin Klein and Boss. Had his teeth cosmetically enhanced. Lost weight, picked fights 3 times a day. Even with the kids, his lungs had no love. All the way around, his laugh had no lungs. Because X, of course, has 5 languages and a PhD, not to mention a hot body, and I bet $1 million. X isn't a day over 30. The truth is, I said nothing. Let him say it all. You did the main course. Here's dessert, baby. And then he has a little baby one, which is also from my alter ego. Very quickly, exit. I hide my machete, spear gun, sling, battering it out of here with jackal, polecat, lynx. No more monkey tricks. just loose and quick. The next one is about the journey from that old life to the new life here. It's called White Sky, my old life in Africa. Outside, the sky is white as snow. But there is no snow in Africa today. Not in Accra, Djibouti, Entebbe, Addis Ababa, or Zanzibar. It's an impossibility, the idea of blizzards, gales, aberrations of winter while we sit here hugging the heat to our pores. The board flicks names. Brazzaville, Lilongwe, Kinshasa, Babuti. Our destination will land us in the ice chill, erase all memory of this temperature, the slow, languorous sway of some people. Ambali wa mwisho wa safari. Have a safe journey, says my screen. Newsflash of an earthquake in Haiti. All over our spinning planet, weathers, shudders, rocks, cracks. We tip this way and that, curving now towards Yol, and already Africa is melting away as a caprice of light flicks up totemic images, northern childhood memories. My son does parkour, which is, you know, free running. So this is in his voice. Free running. Some may dispute the possibility of 7 paces up a cliff-high wall, briefly skybound, then a flick-flack back to ground, or across from pillar to pillar to finger-gripped gutter. Monkeys long swing to roof, flexed red with pan tiles and chimney pots. But I'm metamorphic. Watch as I scale it. Velcroed runners, a spider's chitons, up scaffolding, then dive, rotate mid-air, a feline, land, leap across bonnets, side-spin the lamppost, bolt park railings, jackrabbit sprint. Free run. I've got this great admiration for men who are good with their hands. My dad couldn't change a light bulb. So, this is for all those men. Sparks. He levers with a wrench, loose-limbed, speedy, in oil-stained jeans, muscles flexed, fingers dexterous. Hiss and swing as an aperture arm pulls the tire from its rim, plucking it first round the edges, like a high, hard scab off skin. He climbs to a mezzanine stack of tires, selects one, throws it down like clay on a potter's wheel. The machine pops, tire snaps back, clank of hammer against steel, then the balancing act, lid hovering, a raised eyebrow. He squats, spins the tire, buzzes a drill, swivels nuts, slick as a job in a pit stop. I reverse, eye in the rear view mirror. Sparks fly. And the next one was written after a life drawing class that I'm busy looking at the artists, not at the model. That's not true. Body talk. Poppy stood beside a chair, her breath held, one eye studying contours, then, with charcoal, blind stroked him in. Helen turned a slow circle, chose a spot, small hands lifted to frame diagonals, Picasso-esque. Yelitsa squatted, then sat cross-legged. With a small easel in her lap, she sketched full frontal, stared. Ilsa frowned, stabbed markings, punctured body parts on sheet after sheet, hung on a line, in denial. Madeline applauded at the vision, a man, then loaded senses, flame and blood, mouth a quiver. Sonia blackened hair, silvered limbs and chest, gave him a green-eyed slant, the rest a smear of streaking red. Pablo found his thunder through angry hands and weapon poised, articulate as Zeus in transit, fleet. Roisin gave in to thighs, fallen open, neglected all but the ditch, swatch of black, a shadow. And this one was inspired from after I spotted a headline, and I'm sure it was the Times actually. Bowron makers suspected as goats go missing. A wild herd in the moonlight. Last night's eclipse still rimming their minds. Black vault of the heavens, ash starred. A bearded billy flaunts boomerang horns. Does a rock gavotte, concubines in attendance. From a van, their musician's hunger releases sheepdogs. A three-way roundup under night's stern eye, its blanket streaming nebulae in their wake. In County Clare, the hanging tree, dark tugging waits, a night for stripping skin. You know that feeling when you're doing something and then you get a flashback to an old memory, something you've completely forgotten about. Well, this poem is about one of those moments. And it's called Between Thumbs. Between thumbs, a wide blade of grass. I pull it taut until the clean green of it is pin straight, flanked by pink. Put my lips to the paper sharp edge, air its siren. Remember how the good thick blade bristles long and low, lighter lime ones high to the ear, some furred and thick, others cool and slippery or waxy to the touch. Skinny ones especially are good for sucking, chewing the bitter sap. When was the last time I lay under blue in a cattleless meadow, measuring clouds with my spears, promising myself I'd never forget being 12 alone in a field? This one is, I'm sure anyone here who's a mother of a teenage boy might relate to this one. It's called On Not Flicking My Tea Towel at His Departing Behind. It's indiscernible, really, the transition between controllable child and charming, deviant adolescent, who appears with four friends in tow, sunburned after a day's surfing at Inch, a full 3 hours away, but who thinks of time, fuel, and distance when the waves are head high, glassy tubes of perfection. Which is why I'm torn between a caress and tight shoulders at the debris left in his pursuit of the next activity, building beer barrels into a house-high pyramid at 2 a.m., only to tumble down, chip an elbow, attract a guard warning, and also praise for creativity. And besides, how can I nag about dishes, flung about clothes, mouldy skinned old tea, or stinking runners dropped when, after his declaration, I scored 3 tries? He lifts me up and whirls, and I know he's missing his girlfriend, the one he hasn't mentioned since February. And he's 19, the age his father was when he fought in a war on the wrong side, his horse shot from under him. Instead of fleeing, he fell to his knees and wept. So I cherish war-free youth, forgive impatient hunger, grab the tender moments. this one here is... I suppose I was feeling a little bit sort of nervous about Big Brother and satellites and Facebook and, you know, that feeling that, like, the last sanctuary that we have really is our privacy, and so that's kind of really gone all together. So this is called Invasion. I can prove to you that the white raven does exist in a cemetery between two pillars strung with nettles, its pale mirage shuddering under a snowy shroud. And who can blame its secrecy when the church path is bombed with hobnailed boots and camera clicks, and even dandelions rise for a helicopter view, swing their clocks into blinded eyes. What's more, from a satellite, I have seen a girl in South Sudan walk 1,000 miles with only insects for food, then deliver an infant in the desert. Lizards crept from under rocks to watch. She talked to stars, reckless, their light an oasis to cling to, through sheets of night, through howls and sweat. Yet, when I flew there, found a caravan to lead me to her, she passed the cool mouth of my camera, growled her rejection, glassy as a prophet, drumming omens in the sand. The next one I wrote after my last visit to Zimbabwe, which was last Christmas. And it's a volatile place, Zimbabwe, but it's a good time, it's scary time. On the soles of their feet. I watch it, this Harari life that I have left. New hair extensions, heels, and shiny faces. Maybe they're all models or HIV hookers. The guards with their batons, guiding white Mercedes between parallel lines. Potholes filled up hourly by street kids who rob red bricks from suburban garden walls. Dark windows that roll down, float dollar notes for school fees. The book cafe is closed for fear of revolutionary activity. And Mannenberg's is shut down too. All that jazz is quite suspicious. The black streets rock with drunken combis. Restaurants have sprung up in the tranquil gardens of private homes. And look, there's furniture, clothing, trinkets. On New Year's Eve, the town is empty. Everyone's headed to Big Falls, taken off from Mozambique. But in this bar to an African beat, hips and buttocks sway boisterously. A Roman candle spurts for half an hour, like sporadic, bent-over laughter. Rain brings frogs and lulls the crickets, and scents swirl in, and then there's no electricity. You'd think there was a war or sudden peace, for all the expectation. The drive across an unlit town, some riding shotgun for protection. A pre-dawn skinny dip among the frogs. No lights. No water from the taps. A solitary plane at the airport. But there are diamonds, and cutters, and polishers, and smugglers, and dealers right next to Econet and Buddy. There are diamonds. There are diamonds and bodies. This next poem is written in the voice of a man who's been let down by his aging body. It's called No Banquet for Old Men. Perhaps I have always lacked the capacity for rapture. Do they think of this, the women I have known? Even when I burn, I don't sing. Now I take to the dark. An old man clambering over a young woman's body is ludicrous and ugly. Less a handle opera than the flat tinny slap of banjo strings. Nevertheless, heedless of bowed shoulders and skinny shanks, potential ridicule, I rush to prolong the banquet of the flesh. The dog tied in the yard can smell my thoughts as I watch the young girls pass. What are we but beasts of prey when all that doesn't age is the venom of desire? I'll do one more from this book and then I've just got a couple of newer ones. How am I doing for time? Am I right?
Good.
Okay. Okay, this is called On Hold. Feel like I've been put on hold, only no one has told me, and there's no soothing music. Wonder whether to hang up, because there's no line to your cave, nothing but silence. Maybe your happiness graph has plunged like a frozen swallow dropped to your feet from the sky because winter's window is bleak and you've withdrawn your last 10 euro from the ATM and you're looking down at your body in the shower, missing the jet rush of a new romance, first time sex. But that blonde is not going to make it better, and you know we're better than this, so hold on. Okay, so this is actually an older poem. I was shocked to read about what was going on in China a few years ago. What happens to individuals, you know, they just kind of disappear when they speak out about anything. So this is called Nails Sticking Up. In a rural village, Mr. Ma faces the bureaucrats, losing 13 teeth for the peasant cause. In the honking lanes of old Beijing, Fang Kei documents the bulldozing of ancient courtyard houses by developers with government officials in their pockets. Meets one old man fighting to save his home of 50 years. He speaks out, then disappears. In the city square, Grandmother Chen practices Falun Gong, shoulder to shoulder with thousands of others. When it's banned, she joins the silent protest, is arrested, tortured to death. Distraught, her daughter finds that all evidence has gone missing. A nail sticking up out of a board is hammered back down. Yeah, I was telling you about the Poetry 24. I don't know if you've come across Poetry 24, any of you? It's really great. I would really look it up. And you respond to a news event that's occurred during that week and email it to Poetry 24. And they might choose your poem as a poem of the day. They have one every day of the year. So I wrote this in response to a story about a young Thai woman who... she was very pretty and she, her work depended on her looks, and there was a lot of pressure to keep youthful, so they had to constantly have cosmetic surgery, so hers went horribly wrong. This is called A Short-Lived Tyranny. Last week, she was a pop-up girl, pouting prettily by a brand new car. Next week, she might be tossing seaweed in a wok for customers who idle by the counter, staring at the pretty in the poster behind her. The big chill of realization, swarming tremors as she hands over their wrapped takeaway, fast food like fast beauty, gobbled right before her eyes. The once pretty won't be able to say how she recognized the moment. Perhaps it'll be a quivering eyelid where once there was covetous attention that shudders her through the thin door to silicon. Fat sucked and re-injected in the nick of time, she thinks, needle threading her skin, erasing flaws, stalling fine lines that may be blurring her future. The man with a scalpel in his hand is God. Pretty's face, their new Dorian Gray illusions, poised beside each other in a startling symmetry. This engineered beauty, necessary, they are told, for wealth and sexual power, recognition. But there is a risk in seeking a cosmetic artist, believing the promises of counterfeit consultants, the danger of the arrow that may pierce mistakenly, prematurely, cold time. Okay, the idea from the next one, this poem came from a text actually, which I've used as the title. Clodagh's 50 Only Comes Once Party. She's not the kind to take to bed alone, but might, if she were so hungover there was danger of projectile vomiting, lie down with her boots still on, wait for bright dots to vanish, drop her back to earth. She'll flex her slim muscles, ask for a snog, brush nipples against you in a dance, splay herself on your lap, snake her body up to the barman, disturb his groin with a wink. All the purpose of a siren is in her still, will last until the last yacht sails from harbour. Like so many before me, I resisted at first. That wiry energy, tight excitement of her, could lift you into orbit, give you a taste of death, a little kind. But now, see, she's lured me with the warm blizzard of her personality, arms like bare branches twining you, guttural slang like a charge of ants advances in a genius of mad expression, knowledge gained in sudden ways. A crossing of her legs, pleasure she takes in watching you watching her, the blink of nails on your forearm, waiting for the first rocket, her stomach still tight as an exclamation mark, any jagged nets spliced back together. So we, the gang, will gather on the yacht, place of her long-forgotten maidenhead, forget the hourglass falling, raise the mast and play guess who, as high heels and tights are thrown up, caught. Okay, this one, I haven't got a religious poem here, so this is my contribution to a religious poem, right? A different kind of religion. At the grotto. His tongue's an ode, exquisite pointed tip, a ballad, lyrical, lizard swift, rhapsodic in its flourish. His tongue speaks silent languages, a Venus butterfly, extending beyond any dictionary to crevices and recesses lost to meaning, discovering ancient instinct, which emerges from her grotto into sound.